Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue with part two of our top 10 safety countdown for the NFL draft coming up. We are recording this now on Friday morning. So it's the 21st already. It is the 21st. And we are now 6 days from the NFL draft, 6 days and some hours. Anyway, it's getting very exciting. It's like a countdown to New Year's here, as most people really think of the NFL draft as being the football new year. Jason, how you doing?
Good. It's very good. It's the holidays either way for me. I have as someone who celebrates Christmas, I kind of look at it as getting new presents. Also kind of like the new year, because the 53 is really starting to come in, or the 90 man is really starting to come into focus, and you can look at who else we need to add and what the depth chart's looking like. So I love it, Ken.
Yeah, just a perfect kind of gift to get to when you're my age. It doesn't clutter up the house anymore. And you get to a point in life where the last thing you want is another knickknack. So this is a cool day to get some additional players to look at and watch their film a second time at a lot more depth to get into that. And I'm sure we'll do a lot of that together, Jason. So we cut it off after the number six player. We talked a little bit in the first show. By the way, if you haven't downloaded that, go out and do that now. If you don't want to listen to it first, because it has a lot of the information on where the Ravens are now, where Jason and I feel the Ravens need to improve at safety, or could improve at safety, or might use a draft pick at safety given their current situation. A lot of it revolving around Kyle Hamilton and how he's used in 23.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Without the risk of repeating ourselves, it's just, what kind of safety do you want? Safeties are becoming more and more versatile every year as far as what you ask them to do. There's no such thing almost anymore as a free safety and a true safety. Free safeties are really hard to find, so of course they're very valuable. Ravens are lucky to have three people who could play free safety if they needed to on the roster. So how do you round out the room? Ken and I describe that, and our boards reflect that. I kind of am looking for looking at more closely guys who I think can match up with smaller slots and kind of partner with Kyle Hamilton in some situations, instead of like a true replacement for Chuck Clark, which I think we'll have covered with Geno and Kyle.
Yeah, I think that's the way to look at it. The Ravens, potentially could use a dime back, and that could come up in 23 under multiple situations. Obviously, Patrick Queen could be traded. But if that doesn't happen and they stick with the good pair of inside linebackers they've got, I think they'll be a committed nickel team, but you've always got the risk of injury. And if it happens, you need to have the answer. And the answer is most easily, in case of injury, a platoon of a two down linebacker and then a guy who will come in on obvious passing downs. And for that, you really want a good dime back on the team. One of the great things about Ozzie Newsome is he always had the perfect spot, and it was always pretty much in the sixth round or later to pick up that core special teams player who could also help you as a dime back. He did it time after time after time with Haruki Nakamura, Ralph Staten, Chad Williams, Chuck Clark. Anthony Levine was a UDFA. You know, Corey Harris, who had the great run during 2000-2001, was a very cheap free agent the Ravens got, who previously played, I think, at Miami. But anyway, a lot of guys who'd been extremely cheap can't come in those later rounds. I think we identified some of those guys that we really like in the first show that might end up being UDFAs, or they might end up really being sixes, and definitely could get a shot. Remind folks of who you had at number 10.
Number 10, I had Shamori Connor of Virginia Tech, who I would be looking at as a UDFA. He's got that slot coverage. He's kind of a combo safety like a lot of those guys. And you mentioned Brandon Howden that you had towards the end of your list. Yes, Jordan Howden at the end of your list. A lot of good combo safeties, but, you know, if they – I said earlier or in the earlier show – if we did spend a fifth, you know, on one of these guys who we think is a clearly better player or a great fit, you know, one of our top guys here, one of the guys that are mentioned in this show, I don't think I'd be terribly disappointed, because at the end you're talking about improving your pass coverage in your secondary. So,
right. You're right. There is a difference there. I mean, it's at least a priority position in terms of the leverage of the downs that are played is that dime back. So if somebody reaches for a slot corner slash dime back in round five, I'm not as upset as when they reach for a second fullback in the fifth round, as the Ravens did two drafts ago. So a little bit of obviously bad taste in my mouth still from that. Okay, so we're gonna talk about the top five now. Now, Jason, we already kind of spoiled it because Jair Brown was my number six guy. He's your number five guy.
Yes, sir.
And my number two guy is already off the board because he's your number six guy, I think, right?
That's right. Okay, so you have a number five guy, I would imagine, over there.
I do. I have a number five guy. The six and the two, by the way, is Jordan Battle. Number five guy for me is Sidney Brown of Illinois. All right. Now, make sure to get down to my notes on him. Make sure I have 5'10", 2'11". So he's got the size component at the proper level for a safety, though 5'10 is a little small. 10 1/4 inch hands, 4.47 speed. He's 23 already. All his drills are impressive. In particular, his jumps are outstanding. The jumps, you really want to corroborate this once you see on tape, but I find it useful to know the jumps in advance, then go to tape and see if I can see if he's really using some of that on tape. Also 23 bench reps. So very impressive for a safety to be able to do that. He's the twin brother of the running back Chase Brown, who's also in this draft and had a big year at Illinois as well. Fifth year senior, 50 college games played. Unfortunately, a consistently bad tackler in five seasons with a career rate of 17.8%. If it weren't for that, he'd be higher on my board. 16.5% in 2022 was the best of his career. So this is the issue for Sidney Brown. He has got to get that corrected. Hopefully there are things that are form related and not just, it doesn't seem like it should be strength related, given the reps, but it could be angle related. There could be other reasons why he's missing tackles. He's a very high risk, high reward safety in terms of a lot of things, in terms of plays, but also I think in terms of where you draft him, because he's going to be highly sought after with his athleticism. 49.6 passer rating against as a fifth year senior with one touchdown, six interceptions. He did give up 7.4 yards per target. So that's telling he's giving up some big plays, and he still has a remarkable interception total and passer rating again. So that's a nice combination of things, but it really, yeah, obviously we're talking about a safety here and not a corner, but he's more like Marcus Peters in terms of how the results might look over a season at safety than how, you know, Marlon Humphrey or some other players might look at corner, who are more focused on reducing completions, maximizing forced incompletions, I'll say. Bates the quarterback very effectively when stride for stride in phase, you'll hear that call, and finds the football very well in man coverage. That's a very nice trait for a free safety to have. When you can find that stride for stride quickly, get into phase quickly with that opposing receiver, it gives you a better chance to look for the ball. You've got techniques then that you can use to get your peek into the backfield, find the football coming out, and gives you a better chance, obviously, to make a play on it. He's played strong safety and slot corner, a little bit of free safety. I think he could probably play any of those positions in the NFL if his tackling improves. And I think because his tackling's been a problem, and also because I think his range is good and his center field is good, I think they're going to try, and whoever gets him is going to be highly incented to try him at free safety. And they're going to be more likely to draft him because they think that he can play free safety. You mentioned free safety, the much harder position to fill.
Yes, a lot to say about Sidney Brown for me as well. First of all, I did not notice the missed tackles in the games that I watched, but I saw the reports, not only those numbers, but the reports of missed tackling. And I would go out on a limb to say, even though I haven't seen this, that it has to do with his hip tightness and his body build. He's got these stocky legs, you know, big bubble butt, average change of direction, even though he's a fast, you know, you mentioned his testing, very fast jumps out the gym. So he's got these stocky, really strong legs, which aren't the best for, like, you know, you hit flip and so you get a running back who cuts back on you. I can see him getting an arm on him, and that's about it. But I didn't notice it personally in the games that I watched. What I love about Sidney Brown, though, he's actually my positional favorite. I have him at number three, which is high, and that's why I put him as my positional favorite. I would think most people have him where you have him, Ken, like around five or six. Mm-hmm. But it's his nose for the ball and his hustle. He's a tackle hog. It's just a constant energy, constant hustle. I think some of his interceptions were hustle based as well. Like, it's just him seeing where the ball is and busting butt. And if it's a, you know, the ball gets tapped up in the air, he comes down with it, you know, good ball skills. Special teams plays on highlights is something, another thing that I noticed. I don't watch the special teams units on each side, so I can't tell you if he's a full-time starter there or not. But he laid somebody out on special teams. His downhill speed is evident. Love his angles. He gave wide receivers and tight ends a rough ride in the Senior Bowl, and you could see that on coverage. If he's manned up and asked to press up against them and run with them, he's very physical with them. He's a comfort player to me. Like, I feel good with a player that hustles, a player with that kind of physical skills and who's around the ball, who accumulates a stat line that's out of his norm. You know, and I think taller targets or quicker targets could give him problems, but average athletes, you know, I think that, you know, or regular good athletes, I think that he's going to be more than fine. I just like him. I like players that are instinctual and around the ball and accumulate stats. And that's Sidney Brown.
Yeah. One of the things that I did is I probably do have him a little lower because I think he's a free safety, and the Ravens don't need to reach for a free safety in any way, shape, or form. Now, that doesn't mean he shouldn't be at any particular point in my list. I just think they can benefit more from a combo slot, a slot dime guy. But there's no doubt about it that Sidney Brown's set of characteristics are more valuable, even with the missed tackles, relative to some of the other great tackling players we've already talked about in the first show and we'll talk about in the rest of this one.
Yeah, no, as far as like team fit, you know, obviously that's a question, but like when it comes down to it, Ken, you could have said the same thing about Kyle Hamilton, as far as look like, hey man, he's a better free safety. You want to put him at safety, but you know, when it comes down to it, I like players who are around the ball and, you know, I see a future for him in this league, no matter even if you played him at dime backer, I'm sure that's something that he could adjust to fairly easily, considering his, you know, his body build, his stockiness and everything else. He just has a knack for being around the ball and wants to get there really, really bad. Back end of plays, he is the last one to start jogging. Like, he'll be running in hopeless situations and just finish it out like a baseball player running past first base when he knows he's out. Like, it's just part of his DNA. And I love him for that. Love him and his brother, by the way, in this draft.
Sidney go in the second round or the third round, in your opinion?
No, I think he's, I don't think he goes in the second round. I think he's more of a you know, I have him as like a fourth round player. He's number 72 on my board. And I love him, you know what I mean? So, you know, add 30 spots to that, you know, say beginning around four or so is where I could see him going. And okay. I think that would be, yeah, go ahead.
I don't think he lasts that long because I think he's got free safety characteristics. So when you have ball hawks, they go earlier. Jesse Bates might be a guy. Brown may not be as good as Jesse Bates, certainly, because very few safeties have been. But he's the kind of guy, I think Bates went either the second or the third round. And it really would not surprise me. If he's around the fourth round and the Ravens are picking, run. Run to the podium with that pick. That's just a lot of value there. Now, admittedly, there may be some other guys that the Ravens just have to have at that point. But that's what's so fun is, you know, we get in the middle of the draft coverage and we're hyper excited because there's five picks to go and there's six players that we all really like. That would be good. I think we're going to have some of that, particularly at 22 for the Ravens. Should be a very interesting first night of the draft.
Absolutely. So he was all the way up at three on my list, Ken. I'm not sure if I said that, but yeah.
You did. So five is covered for both of us. We're now down to number four. So who's your number four guy?
Okay, yeah. Right behind Sidney Brown, I had Christopher Smith of Georgia, a five-year player again, so age is not on his size. He's a little undersized, maybe from a height weight perspective, 5'11", 192. So he's not tiny, but he's not stocky. More of a strong safety / slot. And the reason I have him this high is because he can cover in man. His change of direction is evident in the game tape. He can play post, but he looks like a natural slot corner to me. He's experienced, fearless player, fearless and fast north-south, which defies his 4.6 240, shows to me that he has good instincts, good change of direction, and somebody I think like Jamie Robinson my number one guy would fit in really well with Kyle Hamilton, you know, a safety who can match up in the slot if he needed him to, or let Kyle match up in the slot and have him sit on the bench while Geno's in there.
Now, I missed this somehow because he's my number nine guy. So we should have already talked about him, but I don't think I did. I think that we
okay.
Your nine guy was Skinner. And then I talked about Skinner and then we went to your number eight guy because Skinner was my number eight. That's what I think happened. But anyway, Christopher Smith, my number nine guy, the stuff you mentioned is all good. The speed is a little less than you'd want. I think he does make up for it very well with his instincts. My line is plays faster than 462 with instincts and diagnosis. And I had two plays to really look at. Look at the pick six against Clemson in 21 and the pick versus Oregon in 22. They're outstanding instinct plays, both of them. And you know, his speed did not matter. And it goes to show a lot just how much more important instincts are than pure speed on the back end. And those were you know, both plays I like. Bench, vertical, and broad, all very bad for him. You know, again, your acceleration is often very closely correlated with your vert and broad jumps. And, you know, for a player to show off instincts that have him playing at such a obviously faster speed for my eyes, I say, this is really impressive. You know, his instincts had to be really good to get here. He is 23 years old or will be on May 1st. That's not ideal. He's been a consistently poor tackler in college, 14.6% in his career, 15.1% in 22. But on the other hand, you get a free safety type passer rating, 61.9 opposition passer rating, 6.5 yards per target is fine. It's not exceptionally good, but it's not exceptionally bad either, with three TDs and six interceptions career. So he's played a lot of college football, and he has really done well in terms of his total coverage statistics. You know, he's a full-time free safety who really plays downhill and really likes to make plays around the line of scrimmage. You really notice it. Likes to jam up passes for short gains. You always want to see that. Has not been the greatest tackler. Doesn't always convert. But I love the way he tries to direct plays and tries to contain plays. Those were good. Don't know if you saw it. And you mentioned that special teams plays. He will get some extra points with Harbaugh in the room at least come draft night. But he picked up a punt that rolled to a stop at the 5-yard line and ran it back for a touchdown.
And I did see that. Yeah,
that's the kind of thing. Well, he's going to love that, and you know he's going to be probably a red star guy from Harbaugh as far as that goes. So you never know. So I don't really think he's cut out for single high, but we'll see. He may be a guy who can adapt to single high at the NFL level. He was one of the really difficult ones. I wasn't sure if he's going to be quite on my board or quite off, because there's a lot of guys, frankly, close at the bottom. And Smith is a guy I'd be much happier if the Ravens got him either cheap, meaning a six, or as a UDFA. And there will be some people who will look at his spate of testing and say, on that. Right. It just won't be all teams. And some of the clever teams that'll value him differently, hopefully will look at tape and say, there's a ball player here.
Right. I think that what he sacrifices in those explosive numbers is, the non-stocky lower half, the anti-Sidney Brown, if you will, is what he gains in his quick hips. You know, it's just very fluid, oily hips, as they say, change of direction, eyes. There's a lot to like. Maybe I'll have to change my star player to him if he's being mocked that low. Because, like I said, I like him better than Brown and Battle and Jamie Robinson. I saw that he can play the post. I liked what I saw in the post, but to me, he looks more natural in the slot and would be, therefore my ideal fit for the type of safety the Ravens could add.
Yeah, I'm seeing Draft Network is one of the boards you can look at. They have Christopher Smith at 57 overall. So okay. They have him as a second round pick. So I think you're more in line with the traditionalists here than you are giving yourself credit for.
There you go. Yeah, I have him at 95 on my board. So, I have Sidney Brown higher, obviously.
Okay. All right. Outstanding. So where are we now? That was your number four guy, right?
And Brown was my number three. I don't know if you gave
him. No, I still have a number four.
Okay.
So it's Brandon Joseph of Notre Dame. Not sure where you had him. I think you're missing one of these guys, so it could be Joseph or it could be somebody else. We'll see. Maureen and I probably watch Notre Dame football as much as anything else, so we get to see Joseph play a fair amount. Another 462-40 guy. He's 22, so he's a year younger. He has played some incredible football at Notre Dame and Northwestern for 3 years before he transferred. Great split safety prospect who probably is not an ideal back end single high guy. And the comp for him is Geno Stone. Geno Stone, almost the same speed. It might've been 462. In fact, that Geno Stone was in school, but a back end guy with certainly some instincts and got all kinds of anticipation. And the biggest positive the other team can give you, other than actually saying fine 20 on every play on the quarterback's armband, is that they never threw at the guy. Never. So there's a good cut up of the Ohio State game out there where he had four tackles and he was not targeted for the entire game. But OSU was just completely staying away from his areas with throws. I think Earl Thomas and those heat maps that were there before, or Ed Reed, in terms of, you just don't want to throw to his area of the field at all if you can avoid it. But I think they were, a lot of people looked at the Notre Dame defense this last year and said, if you look at the guy who could beat you defensively, it's probably him. He's the guy who could relate to, some turnovers. He had 10 interceptions in his career last year, targeted only 17 times the entire year, 17 times in 10 games, 4.7 yards per target, one touchdown, one interception, just never gets beat deep. Did not allow a reception the entire year over 16 yards. Career, he's got 7 passes defense, 10 interceptions. And get this, this is a career college opposition passer rating, 42.6. 39.6 is every ball incomplete. So 42.6 is fantastic. And obviously you'd have to have a number of interceptions to do that. In 2020 at Northwestern, and that's the COVID year, so it was a little bit shortened for Northwestern, I'm sure. His opponent passer rating was 2.8. for the entire year. So that's fantastic. 11.1% missed tackle rate was a big improvement rate from prior years where he's still at 15.7% career. But it came on a relatively small number of total tackles. So I liked Brandon Joseph. Obviously we probably a little bit biased towards picking a Notre Dame game guy here, but I did like him a lot. I think he has that it factor for a free safety that makes him a very exciting draft pick for somebody.
He does. He does. I don't like him, obviously, as much as you. And I think that the best way I could say it, Ken, is I think he's pretty good when the ball is, or he's very good when the ball is not in play, which is, you know, a relative term. But when the ball is in play, like miss, tackle miss is getting dragged, I'd like to know what his miss tackle rate that you had there, if it was acceptable or not.
Yeah, it was good last year, or it was above average last year. It was 11.1%, but it's 15.7% for his career. And 11.1% is good, 15.7% is bad.
Yeah. Okay, I might have to go back and watch him again. So this is why I love doing this show, because in the games that I watch, miss, getting dragged, uninspiring athleticism, especially shows in this tackling. But his 10 career interceptions is keeping him in consideration for my board. Can play deep. I don't know if he played a lot of split safety, if he was deep all the time. But, you know, the lack of targets and I think he's a very uninspiring athlete as far as, like, when you get to the NFL level, he's going to be a liability with when a ball carrier's got the ball in his hands. Like, I think he's slower than a 4.62. And I don't know if you saw that or not. That's just my personal opinion. And when we're splitting the hairs here with the who's draftable and not, that's where I would like to ask.
You know, it's a very valid question. And one of the problems with trying to answer that for Brandon Joseph is the other team never throws at him. So how do you judge his reaction time as being, you can, in terms of he takes one route and he tries to get there. You can see if that bracket is holding up. But there's just not a lot there to judge. Would he have gotten there in time for the football? Particularly well. So I will admit I've probably come up short on some of that, but on terms of how the number of targets are finding him, it's very low. And the overall result on those targets is unbelievably good when they did throw the ball to him.
What about if, like Joe Mixon or Nick Chubb or Najee Harris has the ball and he's got a pretty good angle? You know what I mean? Like, how do you think he holds up in the run? Not versus the passing game, but just like not being a liability in tackling.
He won't be as good as your typical strong safety, and he would be as good as many of your other players. Like, I honestly think Geno Stone is a comp for him in a lot of ways in terms of, you know, PFF really loved him out of college. But I'll tell you what, last year I really liked Trent McDuffie, and I liked Trent McDuffie, and the Ravens didn't like Trent McDuffie. And in fact,
me too.
Director Costa, after the fact, had a really kind of specific reaction that he had to a fan who asked about McDuffie.
I remember.
And it was one of these things where McDuffie, it's all about the results in college. He had like 3-point-something yards per target as a corner last year. And that, you know, you can't fake that kind of production. You just can't fake it. And you know, we have guys who run the entire spectrum, particularly in the corner group, where Gonzalez, who's super highly thought of and has great physical traits and all, is over 8 yards a target. And Devin Witherspoon, who people try and find some way to put him behind Gonzalez, has incredible yards per target. And Malcolm Forbes has great yards per target when you consider the interception returns in particular. And, you know, I don't get it in terms of how people can say, well, the production really doesn't matter. It's what I'm seeing on the tape. And I keep thinking to the scene in Moneyball where all the scouts, the old time scouts, are around the table saying the ball just kind of flies off his bat. You can see the ball just kind of fly off his bat when it hits it. And it's just, it's what's his walk rate? You know, that's what I'd want to know about that ball player. So anyway, he had production you couldn't fake. I'm most concerned that this is a Notre Dame pick. So anyway, I'll leave it at that.
That's okay. I would see him as a free safety only. And I think that's what's like kind of scaring me away from him. You know, I can only tell you what I see, honestly. And, you know, I see a free safety that whose play speed is like closer to 4.7 than it is even 4.6. So I don't know, man. He is a really smart player, though. You can tell. I mean, there's a reason he wasn't targeted. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's because I don't know. I'd have to watch more. So, I'm going to have to go back and watch. Is there I'll ask you maybe after the show if there's a game I should check out. Maybe one of his better games.
Look at the cut up of the Ohio State game. It's out there. It's a great cut up. It has him marked on every play, and they just never went after him. You won't maybe get what you want, but it should tell you that Ohio State's really looking away from him. They're looking to, you know, use their receivers, and they had a lot of receiving threats this last year in different ways to not attack him.
Gotcha. So,
anyway, take a look at that.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate that, buddy.
All right. We're at number three for you.
It was Sidney Brown was my number three.
All right. I have him at number five. So we'll go to my number three. And he may not be on your list because I can't figure out who else you would leave off. So my number three guy is Ronnie Hickman of Ohio State. 60203, 33-inch arms, 445, 25 bench reps with 33-inch arms as a safety. That's pretty amazing. He won't be 22 until 10-11. Some big bonus points there. He only lost four college football games. His last two really have to sting, the Michigan and Georgia losses for Ohio State. But you want to play the proven winner card or whatever, you can do it on that. He's certainly played a lot of winning football, and that's part of being recruited.
Hey, guys, I want to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock. Because when I'm not podcasting, I am. My day job is a smart home specialist. And the Eufy Video Smart Lock is perfect. This is what you guys need to go get. It replaces the deadbolt on your door. So now you can come home without fumbling with keys. You can just type in a code. Or, even better, use your fingerprint to unlock. After 1 second, you put your finger there, pops out, my door's open. It's perfect. It also is an integrated video doorbell. We've all seen the video doorbells. We all know the ones that are out there. I've seen many of them get stolen. No one's going to steal this because it's your door lock. It's impossible for them to steal. There's no monthly fee. Other ones do. But this one, it'll record locally, so you never have to pay if you don't want to. The battery, it lasts up to 4 months. Plus, it notifies you ahead of time. And I mentioned earlier, 1 second fingerprint recognition. No, I meant 1 second till it opens. The AI self-learning chip will learn your fingerprint even faster, and then it opens up. Completely keyless entry. No more keys. And I know I set this up as I'm a smart home specialist, but anyone can install this. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. That's it. And then you're done. Guys, I love this product. Make sure you check it out. Now, here's the easiest thing to do. Just go on to Google or whatever you prefer and search Eufy Video Lock. That's E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door just like me, just like Ken.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify?
Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Great program. He's played everywhere in the secondary except outside corner. So they've had him at the slot. They've had him at dime. They've had him at free safety and strong safety. Had incredible coverage year in 2022. And this is one of the you can't fake it numbers again. 107 yards allowed on 30 targets. That's 3.6 yards per target. A 39.2 opposition pass rate with just one interception. So what that's telling you about is he's basically allowing near the minimum for the quarterback rating formula in all the other three categories since he only had one interception. So that's really remarkable because it'd be 39.6 if he had zero interceptions and was at the minimum in every other category. So that tells me things are really going right. With 33-inch arms and playing strong safety most commonly, I still think it would be reasonable to expect better ball production that he's had. One interception and seven PDs in his career. And that's really the only downside I can see on him. He does not have a great missed tackle rate either, 16.9% last year, 14.9% career. That's got to improve, and it probably should given all the things about him. He's got 25 bench reps. He's got those long arms. He's the right size. Something's got to be wrong with form. Hopefully that can be fixed in terms of being a more productive tackler, a higher rate tackler. Almost never beaten deep. He had two catches allowed for 28 yards this year. That was the longest he allowed all season. Didn't have a touchdown allowed, one interception this year. Diagnosis way too quick for screen blockers was my other point. They try and get set up. He's already in the forest, and then he's by the forest before they can toss a block on him. So a lot of what he did as his playmaking bread and butter was minimizing short passes in front of him. The Ravens love to play zone. They love to, you know, have big guys obviously in that zone, and a guy with 33-inch arms at 6 feet fits that requirement in terms of a really good underneath player. So he could do a lot of things for a team. I think he could play slot. He could play dime, or he could play strong safety, any of those three. I probably at this point in his career, I probably wouldn't have him at free safety given his ball production, but I think he can play any of the other three spots.
That's nice, Ken. See, this is what love about this time of year, because we have completely different opinions on this one. We went through the whole D-line show. We were pretty in lockstep. You'll get a kick out of this, Ken. One of the games I watched was the Ohio State Notre Dame game. So it's so funny. I was watching the other side of the ball here with Ronnie Hickman. I see that bulldog mentality, Ken. He does. He will blow up screens. If you got yourself in a bunch formation and he's over there, he's going to make a play. And the other thing that I liked about him, is he has nice discipline on misdirection. There are a couple of times, I think it was, in fact, the Notre Dame game where they tried to run some misdirection. And, he stayed in his spot, was very disciplined, and made the play. When you talked about the missed tackle rate, what's going on? It's that his body control is way below average and his stiffness shows in multiple areas. So not only at the catch point, but being able to manipulate your body to be able to go up and swat the ball, but in tackling as well, his body control is just like he's stiff. He's very, very stiff. And I think that hurts him. And then you also mentioned that, as far as not giving up a touchdown, he is an extremely safe, like he plays the game very safely. There's almost like no instincts. Like he's going to sit there and make sure where the play is and not jump and not jump and not jump. So I don't know. I just look at the below average athlete, despite his testing numbers. I don't think it shows on the field. I think he's more of like a, I don't know, he kind of moves like a defensive lineman, you know what I mean, in a safety's body, and it just kind of bothered me.
Let me try and ask you a question relative to this.
Sure.
And I could see it is easy to kind of start building a set of things you think about a player. And I do it all the time. And then I have to like get back at production then and say, if that were true, how the hell does he get 3.6 yards per target? Because I agree there's some desire to stay on the back end of a bracket sometimes in coverage with Hickman, which is not a bad thing, but it should result in some ball production. So that is mm-hmm. a bad thing. And there can be something with the targets that shows up occasionally when the player underneath is more often charged. I'll call it charged, but you know, credited charge with a target that is between level 2 and 3. So sometimes a linebacker will get that instead of a safety, even though they may not be equidistant, or even though the safety, you know, may be closer to the player over the top. So I'm not saying that can't happen. So targets can be a little funny as PFF counts them. I still think 3.6 yards per target is so far above everybody else. I'm wondering how he could get that. And maybe some of it's coming on screen passes and his ability to get some minus twos on behind the line of scrimmage plays, but he also doesn't give up any deep balls. I mean, 28 yards is the deepest pass he's allowed.
Right.
He did allow it twice, but still, that's remarkable.
I would say, number one, you're like you're saying, the A dot, you know, everything is around the line of scrimmage that he crowds. The other thing is, I bet you a lot of those passes that they're crediting, you know, are being targeted to the corner because he's just so far back and out mm-hmm. away from the action. Like, you remember in the Dolphins game where Kyle Hamilton blew the coverage?
Yep.
Not the one down the left sideline, the one down the right sideline. And I had a good conversation with Gordon McGinnis from PFF on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Kyle Hamilton blew that play. That's Tyreek Bleeping Hill screaking down the sideline. He's supposed to be the deepest of the deep, blah, blah, blah. And of course, Kyle Hamilton came away from that play scot-free PFF wise because
I talked to Gordon about it too. Same thing. But it was, I told him, I think I'll look it up right now, but I believe he's got 2 now credited on PFF. I'm really interested to find
out. You know
what,
Ken? You're going to have to give me credit for that because that was
credit. I at least get the credit.
The one
on the left sideline because I was going by the post play emoting and what Marcus Williams bailed out on the play from the line of scrimmage, realizing that Hamilton was not in the correct spot. And then he, okay, we're going to get back to this here. 2022 season, week 2, touchdowns allowed. Let's go for Hamilton against Miami.
It should be 2.
I agree. It should be 2. It's 2. They've got him with 2 now.
Good.
So I think maybe we're the 1-2 punch on that. Let's just not try and each hug all the credit in terms
that's
of what's
so
going
funny.
On.
No,
but
no,
I definitely talked to him about it.
And that's hilarious. What's, but as
it's
it
great about PFF that they actually will listen to you when you go to them with a problem like that. And you say, wait a minute, the post play emoting doesn't work. And you obviously went to him on this too. And it got changed. And Harbaugh, they're talking about it later in the season after they can. I mean, they really can't talk the very next game about how poorly this player played. They really need him to turn into a good player before they can start talking about it. So anyway.
Right. But with Ronnie Hickman, I just see a extremely safe player who's away from the ball a lot. You know, if it's a bubble screen or something in front of him, yeah, he's physical. He's got a bulldog mentality, but he's almost like very reactionary is what I would say instead of safe. You know what I mean? Very reactionary. I'm just going to keep backing up. I don't want to get beat deep. And so he was off my board, man. He was actually off the board.
Not honorable mention or anything.
No, nope. So that's our big split.
That's a big split.
Yeah, we'll have to see where he goes on draft day, man. That'll be interesting because he's an athlete, though. You know, he's got the 33-inch arm, 6'2", 203. He didn't run at the combine, but, I mean, you see it in him, man. He's built like an NFL player.
Yeah, I see Draft Network has him at 107, which would probably be a 4th-round pick or maybe a 3rd in the compensatory, probably a 4th-round pick. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'm certainly higher on him than other people, and it is production-based, which – can have its problems. So we will move on. We'll go to number 2 guy. You're number 2 guy.
Sure. It's Antonio Johnson of Texas A&M. True junior, looks for the knockout shot. What I don't like about him, Ken, is he is a habitual head ducker, shoulder use, an injury waiting to happen, a penalty waiting to happen, a missed tackle and wait. And he's gotten rewarded for that head ducking and knockout shot looking for with the three forced fumbles he had in 2022. He was used in man coverage versus big targets, plenty of slot experience. I think he'll struggle versus route runners or quicker NFL slots. But with Antonio Johnson, the closer to the line of scrimmage, the better. Surprising, like inside linebacker skills, if you want to put them that way. I've seen him scrape and shed, make a tackle. He had misses versus Jahmyr Gibbs in Alabama. He was injured in the second quarter in that game and missed three games. But overall, you know, he's listed as the top safety on a lot of people's boards. And I can tell why. It just drives me nuts. It's 6'2", 198. The head ducking, Ken, he's going to get himself hurt if he doesn't clean that up.
So he's number 13 on my board.
Wow, okay.
And it's not that I hated the guy by any stretch. And by the way, if the Ravens draft him with a 6th-round pick or if he shows up as a UDFA, I'm going to be thrilled. Believe me, I'm going to be as happy as anybody. He has really good size, a decent speed at 452, 10-inch hands, and then it gets really ugly with 8 bench reps and some terrible jumps. And it's not like he can't get stronger, but he's already on the, you know, could be in trouble speed-wise if he picks up 15 pounds or 12 pounds, say, to play as a thicker 6'2 safety. Yeah, 6'2 safety, you'd figure him for kind of 210, 208 at kind of the minimum to play kind of a normal safety, kind of a thumping size. He's a downhill player. He is a line of scrimmage player. So, you know, you want a bigger guy in that safety role there. Avoids blocks very well on the outside, just extremely well at getting through traffic, not getting caught in the wash. He contains very well. I thought he stayed home both on the backside and on the front side of run plays. So a lot of safeties know how to chase down a play, but Antonio Johnson, there is an Anthony Johnson in this draft too.
Two of them.
Yeah. Antonio Johnson is a guy who often got ahead of the run play, even on the front side and would be able to contain it. Texas A&M defense, I think, did a pretty good job of playing together in that regard to stretch out run plays. But his missed tackle rate is not good. 15.5% in 2022. That was a big regression. His career was at 11.6%, which is a slightly above average. So that would be okay. I thought part of the tackling issue was form. And you mentioned the head ducking. I don't know if you mean the same thing as me, but he has a bad habit of just not using his arms when he's making high hits or undercuts. Yeah.
Yes. It's like the old adage, the first thing you learn in football, see what you hit. You know, he will duck his head early and he's going for the knockout shot with his shoulder or his arm. So to me, this is easily correctable. You know, more so than somebody who's not quick enough, fast enough or whatever. Like you mentioned him setting the edge, being able to shed some of these bigger offensive linemen, like it's really impressive. I gave him a true second round grade. Of course, he's as at the very end of that list because he doesn't fit with what we want to do. You know, he's right there by the centers that I think are center onlys that I gave a second round grade to because I think he'll get picked in day two. But yeah, the head ducking, Ken, like he's looking for the knockout shot. And what bothered me is like he was rewarded for it. Like he's got forced fumbles off of it. So it's like not a deterrent not to do it, but he's like the missed tackle rate. That's why, bro. He's ducking his head way early, like looking for the knockout shot, and it bothers me. He's gonna end up getting himself hurt if he doesn't clean that up.
Well, that's first of all, it's a very valid point, generally speaking, that you don't want a player rewarded for what he's not doing technically correct. And we've seen how, you know, basically bad tackling form. I mean, obviously Patrick Queen had multiple problems. We're not going to beat on Patrick Queen too much because he's a hell of a football player now. But his first 2 years in the league had a lot of tackling problems. And, you know, it's not like they've even completely gone away, but he had a lot of tackling problems in his first 2 years in the league. And he was still getting splash plays that would occasionally occur when he just laid his pad into the back of a quarterback, say, in the fumble against Cincinnati. You know, and I just – you see that happen and you just kind of shake your head and he goes, well, you got away with that. I hope he's, you know, starts tackling with his arms from now on. And of course, you know, it was a matter of basically about 2.5 seasons before Patrick Queen became a good NFL tackler. And you could see that happening to a player like Antonio Johnson as well. It's
habitual. Like, it's habitual to the point where I'm worrying. And the last player that I worried about like this doesn't play football anymore and got injured in a serious way on the field doing it. So that's what I see with him. And, you know,
Shazier or somebody who
you do. Yeah, Ryan Shazier. And he would do it. He would duck his head into people's backs. But Antonio Johnson does it early enough to where, like, dude, sometimes he's going to get helmet-to-helmet contact. He's a penalty waiting to happen. He's a missed tackle waiting to happen. And he's an injury waiting to happen. And it's a darn shame because I think it's correctable. You know what I mean? If he's a coachable kid and a true junior, I think that he can get that cleaned up. But some of the things he does are really, really special. And maybe I'm knocking him too much for it just because I care about the game. And like I said, it's one of the first things you learn in football. See what you hit. Everybody that's played has heard that. But yeah, I couldn't pass without bringing that up.
I got one other comment to make about his ball production that was just not adequate for his career. Four forced fumbles. That's excellent for a safety, and that's some playmaking. And he certainly isn't around the line of scrimmage guy, but seven passes defensed and one interception in more than 1,500 college snaps. If you look at the tape against Mississippi State in particular, missed an easy pick six. Just it was a room service pick six. It'd be the kind of thing we'd be screaming about for 2 weeks or until somebody else made a similar play for the Ravens in terms of that being a bad thing. I think he could play strong safety or slot corner. I don't think he's a really great fit to play on the back end, obviously, with his ball skills. Don't think you could convert him, even though it might really make sense, to being an outside corner. He certainly has that aircraft carrier size to play that position, but I just don't think he's fit to do that. So, in any case, he's playmaker around the line of scrimmage is how he is going to earn his money in the NFL. And I think you're right to worry about the serious risk of injury that it brings. It begs the question of how can you have him so high when you see these serious technique flaws?
Well, I mean, you know, it's just the rest of his game is so well-rounded. If you're looking for a strong safety and a dime backer, he's what you want. And I mean, it's stuff that happens at the last second at the tackle point, which I think is very correctable. So when it comes to, like you were saying, shedding these blocks, avoiding these blocks, setting the edge, I mean, he's doing what you want your NFL linebackers to do. Like, he's that good against the run. It's just, and he settles. It's just at the last minute, instead of looking up and rapping, he wants to duck his head and knock your butt out. And to me, I think that that's like one of the most coachable things you could do is knock it off. You're going to get us a penalty. So, yeah, it's just like I said, it's not anything physical lacking him back. He just needs to, he needs some tough love, I think, on that.
All right. Hopefully that works out. So he was your number two guy, right?
Yes, sir.
Jordan Battle is my number two guy. We discussed him actually in the first show because I think you had Battle at number six. So we're left with one guy. And if it's not the same guy, I'll really be shocked. But you go ahead and make your comments.
I will be shocked. It is Jason Taylor. Nope, it is Brian Branch. Brian Branch out of Alabama. True junior. Ken, immediate slot starter or strong safety. I think that he would be another guy like Christopher Smith or like Jamie Robinson, a perfect fit for this defense to be able to switch in and out with Kyle Hamilton. He's just a higher caliber player than those two.
So you're on the clock at 22. Is Branch a guy you consider there?
Probably not when I look at the other positions. I have Branch on my board at number 24 without quarterbacks. So guys like Jalen Hyatt, guys like Keon White, Cam Smith are people that I would take ahead of Brian Branch. Just because you're looking at a slot corner, a safety, like for value wise, I would rather have an outside corner. Than that. But I think he's like I said, perfect fit, like Christopher Smith, like Jamie Robinson. He's what I would want out of a safety for the Ravens in this draft. He's just a much higher caliber player than them.
So the only way the Ravens get him is with a trade down, then, by the way you think of it. And they still will have needs to fill that they probably will sacrifice some value, unfortunately, to get a need pick if they traded down to, say, 37 or 41 or something, and he's still somehow is on the board at that point.
Yes, sir. And I even wrote down, Ken, if he played left tackle or cornerback, he's a slam dunk first rounder in any draft. It would fit perfect with Hamilton. No glaring weaknesses to me, complete prospect. I can, you know, nitpick on something. I'm sure some of the advanced stats aren't in his favor somewhere, but like he's a ball player, and I think he's ready for the NFL as a true junior here.
He's got some fantastic advanced stats, or at least the ones I like to track. So first of all is he had a 2.3% missed tackle rate in his – hold on, let me get this higher. That is for his career.
Wow.
In college. 170 tackles with only four misses by PFF standards. He's never been higher than 3.8% in any season. He is probably the greatest tackling safety in college football history. At least he's in the conversation, because there's not going to be anybody else who's significantly better than that when the average is around 13.5%, and he's a fifth of that or less, a sixth of that, really. He knows how to take chances, I thought, when his teammates were there to help. Undercuts to make a play on the ball rather than simply bracketing. So I'd like to see that from a safety that can do either. They bracket or they can undercut. He had 14 tackles for loss playing primarily slot corner. That is an absurd total for a slot corner. It's an absurd total for a edge rusher. But it's you know, who might pick up 12 sacks.
And don't forget his three sacks and two interceptions, right?
Certainly does it all. 4.58 is just not at all the speed he plays at. He's much faster than that. It is explosive burst, figures it out in terms of diagnosis better, squares up very well as a tackler. I think there's a really good chance, I think, that he stays at slot corner because his speed deficiencies will be covered up. But then some team's going to really need him on the back end because he can certainly handle most of the responsibilities there as well. So it'll be a difficult and fun decision for the team that gets him. Did all kinds of things right as a pass rusher. I mean, but the tackles for loss number just blew my mind as well. And then here's the other thing. 5.8 yards per target career. Despite length, that's not really ideal. He's under 31 inches. He had 26 passes defensed in 148 career targets. It's a 17.6% rate. We did have some guy earlier who was up in the 30s, but or about 30, but 17.6% is still excellent. And so Brian Branch really does it all in terms of the actual results of the game. And, you know, and you can look at a game, you can look at highlights, and you'll be satisfied with Brian Branch, whatever you look at.
Yeah, complete prospect with no glaring weaknesses. I'll just go back to that. There's a lot of great things to say. And then on top of it, the fit, like I mentioned, I really like how he would fit on this team. So, small trade back, knowing that you could probably get him as a slot cornerback / safety. I mean, do you want to spend a first round pick on somebody who's not on the field 100% of the time? Well, yes, if he's an edge rusher or something like that. But slot corner is almost as important, you know, arguably more important. If he can stick Deontay Johnson and Tyler Boyd, then I think that you would be able to pay a premium for that, a draft pick premium. But love the player, Ken. Love Brian Branch.
Yeah, I do think he'd find his way onto the field basically 100% of the time, the same way that Hamilton did down the stretch for the Ravens. Is, you know, only missed a few snaps. And I think that with Branch, in his case, they'd be having him at slot corner if they wanted him. I think he'd be moving to another position on the field for another down, even if they maybe sometimes only had two corners on the field. That might not be true in his rookie year, but I think that would be true as time would move on, that he'd be an every down player for sure.
Yeah, the Ravens would have to find a way to get him eventually, maybe not this year, but would have to find a way to get Marcus Williams, Kyle Hamilton, and Brian Branch on the field as close to 100% of the time as possible. And that to me is like the main, like I said, like I could see him playing. Okay, he's your third corner. He's maybe on the field 60, 65% of the time this year. Higher, you think?
Oh, yeah, it's much higher than that. In the NFL, the base defense snaps are quite low. I'll look it up for the Ravens this last year. But
yeah, ahead. I would have thought two-thirds. I would have thought two-thirds and then like, you know, 12, 13% base.
Other points about him?
No, I really don't. I thought that he did a nice job of making a play on the ball, even when he was in trail mode. And the other thing that I love about him is very good eye balance. He can look at the quarterback, take a peek at the receiver, look back at the quarterback, and can anticipate both the route the route combination, the route that he's defending, and when the quarterback's going to throw. Eye balance is extremely important to me from any kind of defender, really, but especially in the defensive backfield, to be able to balance where you're looking at what time.
All right, just in terms of numbers, 205 with four defensive backs and 21 with three defensive backs for 226 out of 1,089. So it's right around like 22% that the Ravens
played.
Okay,
so 70, maybe so 21. He could be 78% on the field, 78% of the time. Okay. All right.
And you know, that's basically what the Ravens did this last season with Hamilton, Clark being an absolutely every down player, and Williams, is they had those three guys, you know, taking 2.8 snaps per play together.
So may I ask how you feel about him at 22?
You know, I guess it comes down to who else is available, and you know, I'm going to take the lame way out. I guess in terms of some of my big guys who I'd love for them to get at 22, if Devin Witherspoon is still available, I don't think there's any way, but I would take him. If Malcolm Forbes is available, I think Malcolm Forbes is the better need pick. I think Brian Branch is the better player. And that would be a sacrifice of value for need to take Forbes, but I do love Forbes. And you know, they could probably trade down a little bit. Where do you have Forbes on your board?
I have him way, way high. I moved him up into projected first round at number, not quarterbacks included, at number 14 on my list, right behind Deontay Banks. I love it. It's Emmanuel Forbes, by the way. I love Emmanuel Forbes.
Yeah. Did I call him something different?
Malcolm. Yeah. Malcolm. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Why do I do that? I know I've done that before too. So he is the interception machine. He's the Marcus Peters type corner that'd be great. Why do I keep doing that, man? I'm guessing I've done that on other shows as well, if you're catching me on it this way, but I appreciate you doing that. So that's anyway the end of the safety show. Anything else? Probability the Ravens draft a safety maybe at some point during this draft.
I would say if you count Brian Branch as a safety, and if you count some of these other guys as a safety, which I think like Shamari Conner or something, I would say 25% to 30%.
Okay, I think that's a good number. I think that's a good number. All right, Jason, just always a pleasure to talk draft stuff with you. You're incredibly knowledgeable, and to be able to go through this with you and have a little bit back and forth on it is always fun. We got some differences of opinion that made for a good show. Hope the listeners like it. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Sure. Huddle It Up Films on Twitter and YouTube. Check out some of the shows I've done recently. I talked about them on the first episode, but easy to find, Ken.
And like we mentioned a couple of times here, we're going to be simulcasting on draft night. Jason and I and some other folks will be in and out, I think, but Jason and I are going to be there the whole time, or at least that's the plan for all 3 days. And it'll be up on Huddle Up Films. It'll also be up on Film Study. Just some Ravens fans getting together to have a really good time watching the draft from a completely Ravens perspective. And we usually have a fairly intimate group. I want to say between maybe like 30 and 100 watching. We'll see if Jason's bringing some additional watchers with us. So the point being, we're not making any money on this. It's strictly a fun and family thing. So please join us if you win, and we'd love for you to participate in the conversation.
Can't wait, Ken. And thank you again for having me for this draft series. I mean, I'm to the point now where I want to like not touch my board anymore. Like, I think I've messed with it enough. Now I got to go back and write some more of Ronnie Hickman, you know? So there we go.
Very cool. All right, Jason, always a pleasure. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.